Good day, everyone. Welcome back to Dreams Warp, the podcast that helps you sculpt your dreams into reality. For this episode, you know what day it is. It's Sunday. That means it's time for our Zen stream on Sunday. So sit back, relax, and enjoy this episode. Hey y'all, before we get into this, I just need to allow a quick word from a sponsor. Thanks for your patience. All right, let's go ahead and get into this. If this is your first time here, first I want to say thank you for checking it out. This podcast presents a psychotherapist and Zen Buddhist perspective on law of attraction, manifesting, spiritual development, self-development, meditation, reaching your goals, achieving your dreams, all that good stuff. If that's something that interests you, you have definitely come to the right place. Now, we have a couple of series here on this podcast. We have Tuesday Taoism, we have our Zen stream on Sundays, and then I try to also throw in an episode or two about some law of attraction concepts, manifesting concepts throughout the week. Those are kind of sprinkled in. So today, being Sunday, we are doing our Zen stream, and basically since Zen Stream on Sunday started, I've been reading from this really nice book by a Vietnamese Zen monk named Thich Nhat Hanh. You may have heard of him. He wrote this book called Your True Home, and it's a collection of short meditations that he wrote. And some of them are just amazing little gems of wisdom. And I found one here that I want to share with you, read it to you, and then share a little bit about it. But it delves into a concept that is often, I think, misunderstood, and is really so, it just gives us such a rich reservoir of things to talk about and things to look at that when looked at through from a kind of Zen perspective, can really open up our understanding to the nature of our experience being alive, the nature of our lives, and how we are, I believe, manifesting our moment-to-moment experience by the way that we are holding our minds. So I'm going to read this, and then we'll talk a little bit about it. But the overall, I think, subject is impermanence. So this goes like this. This is More Difficult to Cure. That's the name of the chapter, More Difficult to Cure. And he wrote, "If we're aware that the self is always made of non-self elements, we will never be enslaved by or afraid of the notion of self or non-self. But if the notion of self is harmful or dangerous, the notion of non-self may be even more dangerous. Clinging to the notion of self is not good, but clinging to the notion of non-self is worse because it is more difficult to cure." That's the end of the chapter. It's a little confusing, and it seems to be playing with a lot of words. But I think it points to something very, very interesting, and I think it points to this idea of impermanence. So first, I'm going to talk about, I think, the more surface level, I guess is a good way to put it, the more surface level view of impermanence. And then we'll talk about how when you look at it a little bit more closely, you can see that it is actually a path to a way to hold your mind, to hold your perspective, that can really free you from a lot of blocks, a lot of suffering. It can be very, very interesting. So impermanence. Now, he starts out here with this line that I really like. He said, if we're aware that the self is always made of non-self elements. Now, what does that mean? So there is a very, very profound concept, a concept I really like. I think it pervades several schools of Buddhism, but the one school that I've heard it talked about kind of the most is a Nichiren Buddhism, which is one of the newer sub-umbrellas under the big umbrella of Buddhism. And basically, it's this idea of interdependent origination, which I've talked about a couple times here and there in different podcast episodes. But the idea basically is this, is that anything that exists, take myself, for example, yourself, right? When we look at ourselves and how we have appeared in this world, there's a lot of causes that went into play to create our lives, right? Our parents had to meet, our parents' parents had to meet, certain things physically, biologically, universally. I mean, the closer and closer you try to trace back the number of causes that had to come together to produce us, the effect in this case, it's truly, I mean, truly mind-boggling. It's kind of miraculous. But the idea is that if you take a step back, you realize that while you seem to be an independent kind of manifestation in this world, you are actually a collection of millions upon millions, maybe billions, of causes, right? So when you look at life that way, you find that there is no, I guess a good way to put it is that there is no real beginning to yourself and there's no real end, because yourself is made up of a lot of causes, things that happened before, being here, the way he describes it, the non-self elements. So things that happen, again, your parents, your grandparents, your great-grandparents, and all the things that had to take place for all those people to meet, for all those people to fall in love, for our biology, the way it works. Again, I mean, it's truly amazing. And then when you look at like what makes up the self, right, is ideas, culture we grew up in, religious beliefs, and all those also have causes from the past. Think of the generations upon generations upon generations of different belief structures, of different cultural upbringings, of different religious backgrounds, all that stuff. I mean, if you even want to draw in things like socioeconomic factors, political things that happened. I mean, just prime example for me, like my family escaped or fled Cuba when Fidel Castro came into power. And if that hadn't have happened, who knows, maybe I wouldn't have been born. Again, those are all causes. Those are all things that happened that are not, I guess, traditionally speaking, they're not self, they're not me, but they are elements of things that happened in the past that are in me, that have created me. So the way he starts out here by saying that the self is always made of non-self elements, right? If you're able to truly grasp that and understand that, then you'll have a deeper understanding. And he says here, if you're aware that the self is not made of non-self elements, we will never be enslaved or afraid by the notion of self or non-self, right? Meaning that there it's not one or the other. It's actually both are true. And that's an interesting way of looking at life. And on the flip side, which is also very interesting, is that what we are doing right now, right, is a collection of causes that will go into the future, right? Future people, future selves. So even what you are doing now, it is like, for example, if you have children, right? That's a prime example. You yourself and your causes that you are making with your child will live on. And so the idea, the fixed idea of the ego or the self starts to kind of dissolve when you realize that what you are now is mere. It's almost like looking at the flow of a river. You can't point at one point in the river and say that is the river, right? Because the water continues to flow through. You can't have that spot that you're looking at without taking into account the water that came before that makes that possible, and without looking at the water that will appear, you know, a few feet ahead of that, which what you're pointing to is now a cause of, right? So it's very interesting when you look at it this way, and this is a nice kind of little bit of an introduction into impermanence. Now, the more kind of negative, I guess, connotations of this idea of impermanence, which literally means not permanent, it kind of can conjure up ideas of everything is futile, oh, everything dies, nothing lasts forever. It starts to sound very, very negative, right? Very nihilistic. And I think sometimes some branches of Buddhism, Zen Buddhism, you know, to someone who hasn't really looked deeply into them, they on the surface do appear as being kind of nihilistic. Everything's futile. What's the point? Nothing's permanent. Everything just ends, you know, and the only way to free yourself from suffering is to just like not be attached to anything. And that is, again, a very surface level way of looking at it. The truth is, and you know what, before I get into that next part, let me just pause here for a quick word from a sponsor, and I'll be right back to talk about the real magic of looking at impermanence a little more deeply, okay? Just bear with me a moment. All right, thank you for your patience. I am back. So let's go a little bit more deeply into this idea of impermanence, because this starts to get very, very interesting. So just as an example, okay, I'm going to start from this and kind of move a little more deeply into this, I hope, and I hope this makes sense. So when we think where he started here, this idea of self and non-self, it appears, again, as I've talked many times before, as a duality, right? So you could say that either you believe in the self or you believe in non-self. And both of those represent sort of a fixed position, right? Either you believe in self or you believe in non-self. And this is true with many opinions that we hold, right? We have opinions about things, and you could meet someone who has a different opinion, and you could get into arguments with this person over your opinion versus their opinion. And again, we are faced with this whole duality. Now, what's very interesting about what he's discussing here, and one of the most, I think, profound things that I've learned from practicing meditation, practicing Zen meditation specifically, is that the real issue is not about holding the right opinion. The real issue is about learning how to hold on to what works for now, but then at the same time having the ability to quickly let go of any fixed mental concepts as reality changes, because reality changes all the time. And many opinions that I felt so strongly about 10 years ago are not the same nowadays. I mean, some are, some are not. So the idea here is that one of the things that we develop through a strong meditation practice, and I talked about this not too long ago in one of my podcast episodes, is this kind of mental flexibility that we develop. One of the things that I find very, very interesting about, that it basically struck me when I first heard it, and I heard it from a Zen teacher. He said, you know, Zen is about direct experience. And what that means is you cannot, like a good, a Zen teacher would not say that what you learn from a book is Zen, or what you learn from a teacher is Zen. All those things fall short. And if you find yourself fixed on any specific teaching or any specific teacher, then you are already lost. And that's different from many other religions that I've read into or that I've practiced or that, you know, I've learned about, is that usually there's something that you believe in, right? There's a faith that you have to hold and that you have to believe through and through, and that is basically how you are, quote unquote, you know, safe, or, you know, safe. Yeah, I guess safe is the best word. So in Zen, however, it talks very much about connecting to that which is your true nature, your deepest self. And any teaching you hold on to, it may serve you for a while, right? So they don't like throw out all teaching, burn all the sutras, get rid of all the teachers. But what they're basically saying is that you use something as long as it's useful to you, but then you at some point let it go and move on to, you know, more of what is your true nature. And that when you really discover, when you really, really, really have that connection within to, you know, using like law of attraction terms, to source, right? When you have that clean, clean, pristine, clear connection, then you don't need any teachings. You really don't need any teachers. You could still learn from teachers. You could still benefit from teachings. but you are not fixed onto any of them, that you no longer depend on them. And that is, again, kind of a very different approach, I think, to a philosophy or a religious belief. It's almost like saying that any idea or any interpretation done by someone else, any someone else's realization, it has a limited purpose, okay? I think in Buddhism also, I'm not sure which school it's from, but the Buddha was quoted as saying that you need to have, I'm paraphrasing this, but it's basically the idea that there are many different vehicles toward the idea, or toward the reality, I should say, or manifestation of enlightenment. So you have some people where the vehicle may be Tibetan Buddhism. You have some people where the vehicle may be, you know, Christianity. You have some people where the vehicle may be philosophy. You have some people where the vehicle may be Zen. There's many vehicles, but the vehicle only serves to penetrate the shape of someone's mind. The ultimate reality, the ultimate truth, is beyond those vehicles. It's not something that is intellectually understood. It's not something that can be explained. It's not something that you can get out of a book. It's not something that you can get out of another person's experience. You have to experience it directly. And this is very, very, very much a Zen concept. And it's very, very interesting, because as we come back to this little chapter where he talks about self and non-self, he's talking about how gripping on to the self can cause suffering, but gripping on to the non-self can cause even more suffering. And so what we find as we get closer and closer to what I believe is true direct experience, absolute truth, if that even exists, is that the key is not getting fixated on anything mentally, right? It's holding all concepts loosely. Even, and this may sound a little heresy given how much I talk about a law of attraction in my YouTube channel and here, but even the concept of law of attraction is a fixed mental concept. And the ability to have the mental flexibility and the ability, this is really, right, let me put it this way. What I'm really talking about here, and think about this, what I'm really talking about is our ability to let go, right? Because, and we talk about that a lot in Law of Attraction practice, right? It's the ability to let go. And that is something that we need to develop. It's almost like we call it letting go, but it's really a very deep practice of becoming less and less dependent on our ego mind, which is obviously rooted in fixed mental positions, fixed beliefs, fixed opinions, self, non-self. I believe this. Well, I believe that. Well, I think you're wrong. Well, I think you're wrong. And all this kind of stuff. This is all mind stuff, mental noise. So obviously there's a time and place to stand up for something. There are beliefs that you can, you know, stand behind that are important to you. But what I'm saying is that as we move closer and closer to the ultimate reality, these beliefs become less and less important, right? And the ultimate reality is source, pure source. So very interesting, this idea of impermanence. As you really start to use impermanence as a practice, what you are really doing is you are training your mind to hold on to things when they serve you and easily let go when they don't serve you anymore. And even when letting go hurts, we are able to move through the pain without attaching to it. So we feel the pain, we're able to hold the pain, honor it, but then we are also able to let go of it. It's a very, very profound practice that comes from what at first appears to be this idea, like I was saying, of impermanence, as just, oh, well, nothing lasts, right? It's much, much deeper than that. It's really about letting go and learning how to do that. So I hope you enjoyed this little chapter. I think it's very, very good. And stay tuned. Be back on Tuesday with another installment of Tuesday Taoism. I invite you once again to check out the YouTube channel, same name, Dreams Warp. Lots of content on there to help you along your journey, your spiritual practice. And you could always, if you want to reach out to me, any comments, concerns, questions, just pick any one of my YouTube videos and post a comment. I get notified right away when I have a comment. and just say, hey, I just heard your podcast and had a question, comment, concern. Put it there. I love interacting with you all in the comment section. All right. Have a wonderful, wonderful rest of the day, and I'll talk to you again very soon.